got a lot of material to cover tonight, so I'm going to quickly get to it. But I want to first express my appreciation and thanks for the opportunity to be with you, for your good attendance, for your good attention, for the work of the Lord that you're doing here. I want to thank the members. I want to thank the elders. I want to thank the Maldens for putting me up and thereby putting up with me. Those of you who fed me, wonderful food. One of the things I look forward to whenever I'm in Alabama is there's really good food in Alabama, and I have enjoyed a lot of it. And it's good to see the good work here and the visitors. We thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it, and thank you. Tonight, we are going to continue in what we've been talking about. Our theme has been from 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15. In your hearts, honor Christ as Lord. Honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. We've been looking at reasons that show basis for faith in Jesus Christ and faith that there is a God, there is a creator. Sunday we started off with the fact that Jesus existed, died, and the reports of the empty tomb and the reports of the resurrection from the dead. Even the appearance of Jesus after he had been crucified and died and risen, appearing to Saul of Tarsus, and all that that accomplished. We talked about messianic prophecies. We talked about foreshadows. And last night, we talked about, after talking about scripture on Sunday, we talked about what Romans 1:20 says, that the natural world declares God's power. Tonight, we're going to switch gears and we're going to look at an argument of the evolutionists. We're going to look at an argument of the atheists. And so, we're going to start with a scripture of what it, the beginning of the Bible, which Christians accept, but then we're going to look at their argument and we're going to take a look at that and examine that. As Christians, we accept things that are remarkable, that nobody ever saw. You believe in a God that you've never seen. You believe there was a creation that you are not a witness to, but you're a witness of. You believe that Jesus, after he died, rose from the dead, that he was born of a virgin, that he made the blind to see, and that he appeared to Paul on the road of Tarsus. On the road to Damascus. Not everybody believes that. A lot of people believe in remarkable things that they have never seen. They believe, a lot of people, that there was nothing and then it turned into something. Different ones have different beliefs, but a lot believe that. They believe that after an explosion, some matter ended up being this planet, and from dead matter ended up coming life. And from that life, dinosaurs evolved into birds, some land animals went back into water and turned into whales, and apes turned into us. They haven't seen that, but they believe it. These are two different, a belief is something you believe that you haven't seen. And you can't get through life without believing things that you haven't seen. Okay, because that's part of life. But we need to have a reason for what we believe. Tonight, we'll begin at examining their, one of their reasons. There's so many things that might be addressed. This will be fairly in depth on one small topic, and that is the argument presented from the form of the fossil skulls. So let's go ahead and get started because we do have a lot to cover. Genesis chapter 1 tells us, in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth, and God said, let us make man in our image and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing. So God created man in his own image, in the image of God created he him. Jesus himself went back when asked in Matthew 19 about marriage and divorce, and he said, have you not read that he who made them in the beginning made them male and female? We believe we were created by God. The evolutionists believe that we came from apes. Let me tell you, that's a much smaller step than the two previous steps. I don't accept that we came from apes, and we'll see some of the reason why here in just a minute. But even before you get to turning apes into people, how do you get from nothing to something? That's a huge jump. And then how do you get from non-life to life? That's a huge jump. From non-life to one cell is a bigger jump than from an ape to a man. But we've addressed those, so now let's talk about this. And this is a Smithsonian image arguing for the evolution of ape to man. We're going to be responding to and critiquing that. I'm going to move very quickly because we've got a lot to cover, but we're going to talk. The idea here is that there was a last common ancestor with apes before these different fossils we're going to be talking about. And then Australopithecines came along, which were kind of largely ape-like, but still they walked more, and it's leading to men. They believe they branched off different ways. They don't think it's a straight line. They think it's like there's some like second cousin type of thing, species going on. But then you get Homo habilis, Homo ergaster, Homo erectus, Neanderthal, some other ones along there too, like Heidelbergensis and stuff, and eventually Homo sapiens. For a long time, they said Neanderthal was a cousin instead of a direct ancestor, et cetera. But without getting into those things, they present fossils and line them up. And so here's what I want you to start thinking about. You cannot see that one right there. Can we dim the lights for just a minute so you can, the other images are easier to see than this? All right. I want you to think for just a moment, what is that? It's something. It's something that lived here on this earth. It was found in the ground. So it was created by God. If God created all life, you go back to Genesis 1, God created the beasts of the field, and God created man and woman. That's either an animal or a person or something in between. What do you think that is? What is that? 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 One of the things we need to not do is look at one or two instances from the past where somebody made too much of an argument over a single tooth or a piece of jawbone or something and say that's all they've got. No, they've got a number of skulls and a number of rather complete skulls. Now, some of them were crushed into 300 pieces and glued back together, and some scientists think it fits this way, and some scientists think it fits that way, but some of these skulls are very, very much intact. What are those things? I'm going to lay out first, so you'll understand where we're going. What I'm going to be presenting, this has been a hobby of mine since the early 80s, and I've enjoyed seeing that some of the things that I was saying way back then, within the last 5 or 10 years, a lot of the scientists are now saying. I've been saying forever that Neanderthals were human beings. And lately, all each scientific report that keeps coming in, it's been helping establish that more and more. The images drawn of them are getting more accurate. Here's what I'm going to be presenting. This is Homo sapien. This is from some bones found. It could be any. I've just picked this one particular Homo sapien. And his bones were found in Ethiopia. And they say that is a Homo sapien. And they say he lived at the same time with Neanderthals. This is from a French reconstruction shop, a Neanderthal. That's a human being. This is a boy, Homo ergaster, which is the African form of Homo erectus. He's a human being. This is an ape. That's the Houston Museum's representation of Lucy, if you've ever heard of the fossil Lucy, the Australopithecine. Lucy toured the United States just here in the last couple of years, and Houston Museum was one of the places it went, and I think that's a fairly fair representation of the ape Lucy. This is what I'm going to be presenting evidence on tonight, that these are people and that is an ape. It's not ape people, there's apes and there's people, and that's what I'll be presenting. Here's some skull sizes. For those of you that ride a motorcycle or something, you know what cc's are. You might ride a 500 cc or a 750 cc. I ride an 1100 cc. Human brain is on average 1350 cc. And so when you see the skull lineups and they talk about the brain size and stuff, one thing you need to understand, there's a lot of variability in the human skull. Let me tell you one of the reasons I got interested in this topic. Years ago, somebody told me I had a weird forehead. And I said, what do you mean? And they described how weird, there's a real deep cavity right here that I could just like bury a Sharpie in. And I said, well, everybody's like that. And then I looked at that person. Took me a month to find somebody with that same thing. And it was a Native American. I'm part Cherokee. And there's different ways to measure a skull. One way you measure a skull is the cephalic index. That's the ratio of this to this. I'm out of the modern range. I'm in the Neanderthal range on that. And so I got to studying anthropology, and I got to looking at things. And like here you've got these different fossil forms and such. You'll notice, by the way, Neanderthals have much bigger brains than modern people do today. But there's a lot of variation in people. And there's a huge amount of variation in apes. That needs to be remembered when they start the skull lineup. This is from Neanderthal's necklace by Juan Luis Arzuaga, professor of human paleontology. About 10% of completely normal modern humans have brain capacity of less than 1,100, more than 1,600. Wilfred LaGrosse Clark says that modern man can range in normal intelligence from less than 900 to about 2,300. There's just a huge amount of variation. But what I'm going to be suggesting is these things down in the 400s and 500s, those are apes. These things up around 1,000 and 1,500, Neanderthal 1,300, those are human beings. Let's come back to this skull right here. When this was found, it wasn't even fossilized. Fossilized is when it changes, it fills with mineral and becomes stone. This wasn't even fossilized, fresh state of preservation, the bone having merely lost its animal matter, not having been in the least bit mineralized. You can spin it around here and take a look at it. Watch that little hole there. I'll isolate it here for a moment. Look at this little hole right there. If you can see, there's some ridge raising around that. After that hole was made, that's not a natural hole. That's not the ear. The ear hole is down below. That is a hole that was put there some other way. And the fact that you have ridges around it suggests there was healing done after the hole was drilled or inserted. And that suggests that this person was in a society, maybe it was an accident, or maybe there was some surgery of some sort, maybe to release some pressure on the brain, or even some superstitious surgery or something. This is a human being, even though you have a serious brow ridge right there. Brain size, 1,280. That's very close to modern average. Brief notes. While critiquing evolutionary interpretation, the following quotes and images are documented from pro-evolutionary sources. Everything I'm going to show you is from the evolutionists. Every quote I show you is from the evolutionists. They don't believe what I believe, but I'm going to be backing up what I'm showing with documentation from them. Why? Well, if you're a believer in God and you're a believer in the Word of God and you read Genesis 1, you believe that's what's happened. If you are here this evening and you're not a Christian, if you're a skeptic, if you're an agnostic or an atheist, you've seen some of these fossils and you want to know about them. Well, I'm going to go to the scientific descriptions of them, and analysis has been coming in that support what I've been saying, that these are people, these are apes. Not that the people saying this believe that, but you'll see as we go along. What you see is what you get. You're going to be able to see the fossils themselves. These are not available to distribution. Copyright fair use law allows me to review and critique material that is copyrighted. And so I'm reviewing and critiquing it, but I won't be distributing this as opposed to some other things earlier. But most of this is available on the web. You can look for web addresses that I put up here or Google keywords. Add an emphasis would be mine. An evolutionist might say, you're about to start quote mining. You're about to start picking quotes from the scientific literature. And yes, I'm going to pick quotes from the scientific literature. That's right. When they say that Neanderthal was as intelligent as us, that's right, I'm going to put it up there. When they say it had a bigger brain than us, that's right, I'm going to put it up there. That's what they said. And, you know, they don't want us to read the Bible to them. And so, you know what? I'm going to show you Science Daily, New Scientist, PNSA, Huxley, different things from Stephen Jay Gould or whatever, is you see quotes, although I don't think we have his quotes now. There's hundreds of slides we're not going to show. But we're going to show what they themselves say. Now, there's similarities and differences between apes and people. There's a gorilla and a chimpanzee and a person there. I want you to look at them and get used to what it is. That's the gorilla, that is the chimpanzee, that is the person. It would be the one reading the book, not the one getting its ear scratched. All right, so human skull, chimpanzee skull, gorilla skull, kind of keep in mind what they look like there. Are we fundamentally different or are we fundamentally the same? The question involves biological, legal, cultural, and spiritual implications. If you don't believe that, consider this. At School of Medicine, Wayne State University, scientists there were saying that humans and chimpanzees should be grouped in the same family. They should both be homo. So that they should be in the human family, in the same family as us. Dr. Goodman said, we humans appear only as slightly remodeled chimpanzee-like apes. An Australian court, this is from BioEdge in 07, Australian court is studying whether to give a 26-year-old chimpanzee human rights. And a professor from London said, it's untenable to talk about dividing humans and apes. There's no clear-cut criteria, neither biological, nor mental, nor social. None? Really? I don't think that out in the jungle, the chimpanzees are sitting around discussing, you know, whether or not they're related to us. I think there's a lot of differences between a chimpanzee and a person. And then there's this musical group, Morally, they in their one of their songs, which is a horrible song, I won't give the graphic details, but the idea is, you and me, baby, ain't nothing but mammals. And so we should act like it. If we're just apes, it makes a difference. But if we're not, it makes a difference. Is that the case? If we really are apes, and many of you have heard this, the genetic argument. Raise your hand if you've heard this. Humans and chimps share more than 99% of their genes. If you've heard that argument, raise your hand. All right, we're going to answer that. First off, from 2006, scientists at Indiana University, Duke, et cetera, they said our results show that humans and chimpanzees differ by at least 6%. That is in stark contrast to the off-sided 1.5%. Now you're not very impressed. You think, wow, okay, so instead of 99%, wow, we found some scientists said we're only 94% the same. It makes a difference. From National Geographic, the shifting boundaries between chimpanzee and human. The gene sequences are around 95 to 98% the same. These other fellows saying 94. This is less meaningful than it sounds. You also share 80% of the gene sequence with a mouse. You also share 40% of the gene sequence with lettuce. So when you hear that 90% figure, that there's a lot of difference in the difference. Mathematically, the structure of the DNA has a certain thing in common, but those differences make a lot of difference. Now, the visual argument is what we're going to focus on. I want you to look at this, and if I was an evolutionist, I would also be presenting this, because I think this makes a compelling visual argument. We're going to answer that argument, but I want you to look at it and appreciate and understand their argument. Now, if you'll take a look right here, they say this is listed as modern man. All of these are skulls with the jaw off. You're going to have a side view and a front view, same skull. Side view, front view, same skull. All the way back here and you have an ape. This is a chimpanzee skull. They're not saying that you evolved from a chimpanzee. They're saying chimps and us evolved from apes, and they're using a chimpanzee as a stereotypical ape skull. But I want you to see their argument so that we can know how to reply to it. Here's their argument. This is small-brained, the jaw sticks way out, called prognathism, and you have a heavy brow ridge up here, and you have a flat cranium. This, you have a bulging, big cranium, big area for the head. This is more straight up and down, and you really don't have a brow ridge. Now, in between, because we do vary, would you say that this could be related to this? Raise your hand if you could see that. Could this be related to this? Could that conceivably be related to that? Could that conceivably be related to that? How about there to there, there to there, there? This is the one we started with. There's that hole in it. Reverse image here. There to there, how about there to there, 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 voila. You've got evolution from ape to man. That's, it makes a powerful visual argument. But there's some problems with that. For one thing, some of these here in the middle were, as I said, crushed. One had been crushed by some water buffalo or something, and it was all just flat, and they had to be glued together, and they don't think they got it glued together right. Another one was in 300 pieces, and that's one some scientists thought it would be this way, some thought it would be that way. But there's still some impressive-looking fossils up there. And so let's start examining that now. Points of review. First, we're going to talk about bare bones and mistaken ID. Sometimes they make mistakes when they're looking at bone. Secondly, human beings don't all have that skull you saw down here in the corner. That skull that said modern man, that's not everybody's skull. Evolution was a theory developed by northern white Europeans. In fact, they were racist northern white Europeans. And they looked at the northern white European skull as kind of the epitome. Not everybody has that skull. Secondly, apes vary tremendously. You're going to see some amazing differences in ape skulls. And then we're going to talk about some other things. We're going to end with some Stone Age tools and some recently discovered ape. Huge. There's a new ape they've just found, up to 6'5" and 225 pounds. That's within about an inch, the same size as me. A chimpanzee that big, so it has a bigger brain and a flatter face. Now, if they'd found that skull and not the chimpanzee walking around, what might they have thought? And it also appears to walk bipedally a little bit more than regular chimpanzees as well. But it's still alive, and guess what it is? It's an ape. We'll get to that at the end. All right, bare bones. Sometimes it's obvious, sometimes it's not. Can you, raise your hand, by looking at that, you can pretty much tell what you're looking at. Raise your hand. Yeah, you can tell those are easy, all right? Now, especially with reptiles, all you gotta do is paint them in green, you got, or whatever color they are, I'm colorblind. All right, how about this? Can you instantly tell what these are? All right, somebody back there can tell. What are they?
They are some type of skull from some type of four-legged herbivore.
Yes, they're herbivores. One of the reasons you can tell they're herbivores is the teeth for grazing, and the eyes are on the side of the head. The way God made predators, eyes are on the front, and it helps you kind of the algebra or whatever to judge distances. Like when an eagle's swooping down, you know, at a fast speed, he kind of wants to know where that distance is. A deer, that whatever those shoots he's eating or whatever, is not running away, but he needs to know where that mountain lion or that hunter is and stuff like this. That is herbivore, but from the bones alone, if these were extinct, you wouldn't know from the bones alone that that one would look like that, that would look like that, that would look like that, and that would look like that. This, think in your mind what you think that is. And everybody that thinking saber-toothed tiger, stop and remember what we said about predators and herbivores. Eyes on the side, that's an herbivore, not a predator. Saber-toothed tiger would be up here. You know what that is? That's a Chinese water deer. Okay, it's in the demilitarized zone between North and South Korea. Now, if we didn't have him in the flesh, you know, it just sometimes it looks different than what you expect. Which pair are the same species? One of these pairs is the same species. Which one do you think it is? Number two, you just picked a collie and a fruit bat. Okay, just because two skulls look similar doesn't mean they're related. I cheated there, they're not to scale. The collie skull is bigger than the fruit bat skull. It's these two. That is a Great Dane and a Chihuahua. You'll notice Chihuahuas are even ugly with the skin on. All right. This is a raccoon and a mountain lion. This is a fruit bat and a collie. Just because two skulls look similar does not mean that they one evolved from the other. In fact, but somebody might say, wait, okay, we're not you know, biologists, we're not zoologists, but the professionals, they would never make a mistake like that. Really? Let's take a look. There was Piltdown Man. We don't have time to talk about him, but if you know about him, there'd been 500 articles were written about him before somebody found out it was a human skull in an orangutan jaw for somebody to file down the teeth. And it was, the fraud was, and was finally figured out in the 1950s. There was Hesperopithecus, also known as Nebraska Man, that Henry Fairfield Osborne, you'll hear about him again in a minute, got from a tooth. One tooth, and he looked at it, and it looks 100% anthropoid. And he decided it's Hesperopithecus, the first anthropoid ape from America. The illustrator in London for the newspaper drew him like this. There's Nebraska Man. And then they found some more bones, and it turned out to be a pig. An extinct type of pig, but a pig nonetheless. And somebody says, yeah, but Piltdown, that was a long time ago. Nebraska Man, that was a long time ago. Okay, this was pretty recent. Raise your hand if you remember this, 2009 Ida. This was supposed to be a big, big thing. In fact, Google, the Google homepage for that day, had Ida on there. Does anybody remember Ida? Not many people following the fossils. All right, but it was a big, big deal at the time. This was the hype. She's the only one who tells the story of a whole skeleton. She could rewrite science. She could confirm Darwinian theory and debunk creationism. She could also question religion itself. All in all, she's quite a find. You're looking at one of your ancestors. She is, according to scientists, a direct relative. Okay, that was, this is the website. This fossil will probably be pictured in all the textbooks for the next 100 years. After, when our results are published, it will be just like an asteroid hitting the Earth. You'll notice by the fact that nobody raised their hand, it didn't apparently turn into an asteroid hitting the Earth. That was the hype in May 2009. This was October. Not even a close relative. No ancestor of humans. Ida is far removed from monkey ape human ancestry as a primate could be. And this is an article from some evolutionists about how could Osborne have ever made that mistake with the pig tooth? How could he have done that? How could a worker as careful and methodical as Osborne have made such an error? This is their answer. Misidentifications and misallocation of fossil specimens are quite common. Some of them are ludicrous. A fossil whale identified as a giant reptile. Rodents identified as primates. Carnivores as ungulates and ungulates as anteaters. The list is endless. That's their answer. But they say, then we figure it out. But what if all of them are still holding on to the idea that we evolved from apes? They might figure out this one wasn't and that one wasn't, but they still keep thinking something is, or that one is, or mine is, or whatever. But what does that say? It says that the scientists make mistakes. The list is endless, they say, on how many times they've made mistakes. So when you're just looking at bare bone, it doesn't always tell you. If you want to read that article, just FAQ, Google FAQ Nebraska Man John Wolf, and you can find that. Back to apes and humans. Look at this skull. I want you to focus here again and see the differences. This is presenting a series, it says, showing progressive changes in various features. And so you notice one of them here doesn't seem to fit. That's an Australopithecine. It's the Tong child. It's a little ape, and it fit in the guy's hand. It's real small, but when it grew up, it would have looked more ape-like. Let me show you why. This is a juvenile chimpanzee, and that's an adult chimpanzee. Can you see the differences? The juvenile chimpanzee has a flatter face. The cranium is bigger in relationship and stuff. But as it grows, it gets more of the flattened in the brow ridge and the thing like that. So this one looks different only because it was a very, very young juvenile. So imagine that fit the other ones more. All right, notice we have, they say, an upright face. A gorilla has a slanted face. We have a fairly vertical forehead. The gorilla has a very flat forehead. We have very little prognathism. That is the jutting forth of this. The gorilla has a lot. We have almost no brow ridge. The gorilla has a lot. We have not the bottom part, but the top of our skulls is kind of like a basketball. The gorilla, more like a football. And we have, this is small in comparison to this, whereas a gorilla, this is big in comparison to this. Now consider, look at these skulls right there. Which look more ape-like, which look more human-like? Everybody point to the skull that looks most human-like. All right, point to the skull that looks most ape-like. Every skull up there is orangutan. The top one is a juvenile. The other one, there's two species of orangutan, and some of them are male and some of them are female. The males have big canines, the females not. There's a lot of variation in skulls. And that's why orangutans look differently. Some orangutans look like that, some like that, some like that, some like that, some like that. If you wanted to pick one of those to say, there's the missing link between ape and man, I'd go with that one. But he's still just an orangutan, and it's variation among orangutans. Listen, they vary in score morphology, form, shape. They vary in appearance, but they're still orangutans. And even if you dress them up, they're still orangutans. Roger Lewin, co-author with Leakey of Bones of Contention. By the way, there's a creationist book called Bones of Contention with a lot of good material in it. That's not this book. Everything I'm showing you is from the evolutionists themselves. This is a prize-winning book back a number of years ago. And it told about the jealousies and the pettiness among and the arguments and stuff sometimes among the paleontologists. And he says, he's an evolutionist and a writer. He wrote the book Evolution for the Smithsonian Institution. He said, in the early part of the 20th century, when everything, the new species on these fossils, he said, much of the labeling was done in the name of egoism and a naive lack of appreciation for variation. Let's take the second part first. Naive lack of appreciation for variation. They would see a little bit of difference and they'd think, oh, this is a new species. Did you see how much variation was in those orangutans and stuff, just among two species? The other part, egoism. Why? Because if you have spent 2 years out there digging, and each time you find a bone, it's apparently the same thing he found, that doesn't get you on the cover of the newspaper or get an article in National Geographic or get you funding. So if you've got a little bit different, you know, a little bit different, you want to say new species or new genus. So egoism caused this multiplication of species. I can build a pseudo sequence, and I'm going to do it right now. I'm going to evolve this into this. Okay, let's start with that up there. First, you'll notice here, the eye is a little bit open in the back. The eye orbit is a little bit open in the back. Sealed around here, open in the back. There, it's sealed all the way around. First, I'm gonna open it up, still kind of similar shape, but open it up. Then I'm gonna fill it out a little bit. Then I'm gonna get a little bit bulkier. Then I'm gonna start bringing in the nose and bring it into here and bring it into there. Now, do you remember that first screen where we saw going from human to ape? And you say, well, it looks like maybe that could work. Well, could maybe this work? Line those up. If you line them up, it kind of looks like that could have turned into that, right? Okay, this is what we just did. We took a lemur and we turned it into a fruit bat. Then we turned it into a fox, then a coyote, and then we turned it into a raccoon, and then a couple of mountain lions. Okay, a mountain lion and then an African lion. Nobody believes that those are related in that sequence, that was an evolutionary sequence, but what did we do? We took some skulls and we lined them up. Interspecific variation. We don't all have the same skull. Some people have square faces because they have that shaped skull. Some people have more V-shaped faces. Some people have wide cheekbones like Laplanders. Some people have slanted foreheads and heavy brow ridges, like this man from Melanesia in the Pacific. Some people have eyes in the middle of their head. Some people have eyes in the top of their head. Some people have eyes close together. Some people have eyes far apart. We don't all have the same skull. That skull that they put on the charts, modern man, is not everybody's skull. It's not my skull. All of these are Homo sapiens. Some of them are Native American, some are from Australia. This one is diseased. But they're not all human skulls look the same. And you notice there how the angles change on those. Neanderthal. This is Neanderthal. This is a composite skeleton from some different fossils of Neanderthal. This is a typical thing. Here's a Neanderthal skull. You'll notice it's longer. From here to here is longer. That's one, and as I said, Neanderthals are down in the 60s on cephalic index. I am too. That's why it's hard for me to buy a motorcycle helmet. I can get extra, extra large, and it still hurts my head. It's not tight this way, it hurts my head this way. Look at the differences here. You've got a comparison of Neanderthal man and Homo erectus. Again, remember what we were talking about? You see, this is one I didn't show you before. The occipital bun on the back. See this section here, the occipital bun? Not here, there. Watch the chin. No jutting out chin. Most people have a jutting out chin. More prognathism, very little prognathism. More, see the football shape? See the more basketball shape. Look at this gentleman. This is an Australian Aborigine. What does that forehead look like? It's sloping. What do you see below the forehead? You see a heavy brow ridge. This is another Australian Aborigine. There's a lot of variation in Australian Aborigines. Australian Aborigines are not Africans. They're not Negroes. They are Australian Aborigines. Something very, very different. Some have black hair. Some have blonde hair. Not all have this type of skull, but some do. This is an Aboriginal skull from 1900. Look how different it is from the typical model skull. Look from the overhead view. It's kind of the difference between a 1980s car and a 1930s car with the fenders, you know, like that, and the headlights out to the side on this super, they call it a super orbital constrictor. Well, I'm not going to get into terms, but you can tell it looks different. All right, but that's a human being, okay? These are, by the way, from an overhead view, these are apes over here. This is a chimpanzee. Let me get back there. Oh, I'm hitting the wrong buttons and don't have time for that. Not good. Okay. This is a chimpanzee. This is a gorilla. This is an Australopithecine. These are like Neanderthal and something similar to Neanderthal and a Homo erectus. And this is Australian and this is considered Kaiser. Look at the front of Neanderthal of this Australian skull compared to the front of, now the back, this Australian skull doesn't look like a Neanderthal on the back. Look at it on the front. You see here, we can see the angle, like Neanderthal. The brow ridge and the jutting out, similar. Racism and evolutionary theory. This is Henry Fairfield Osborne, same fellow with the pigs too. He's comparing here, he says, look at the skull of a chimpanzee and a modern what? Frenchman, white European. And he says, showing the gradual disappearance of eyebrow ridge. So we have here, you have a chimpanzee. I'm going to quit hitting that laser because every time I do, I get it wrong. All right, so you have a chimpanzee, Neanderthal, and modern Frenchman. Now look what he says. After talking about how the Neanderthal looks so ape-like, it says this. It must be noted that many of these features may be found in recent human skulls of inferior races. This is Darwin's right-hand man, Huxley. He says, Neanderthal cranium is by no means as isolated as it appears to be at first. He says, it's closely approached by the flattened Australian skulls. These are Australians. Australians are people. They're people like me and you. They're created by God. They're Homo sapiens. This is a principal. This is a senator. You might remember Yvonne Gulagan, the tennis champ from back in the 70s. She was either all Aboriginal or part Aboriginal. Here's some Aboriginal school children. But do you know how they were treated in the early 1900s? This is BBC 2003. Australian Aborigines have welcomed a plan to set up a panel to oversee repatriation of human remains held by British museums. The scientists didn't want to let the bones go. Some of them, look at this. Among the remains held at London's Natural History Museum, Mr. Dillon said, were the skulls and leg bones of two Aboriginal men who were hunted down and killed by a white expedition in 1900. Once dead, the men's skins were boiled off them on the spot. That's just a little over 100 years ago. Men went down there, they chased two human beings down, shot them, killed them, boiled the skin off, and sent their bones to the museum in London. Why? They'd been taught they were less than human, I imagine, is part of the reason why. It's horrible. This is an old, a cast of an old skull from either Tasmania or Australia. Look how close it is to the Homo erectus skull. Very, very similar. Darwin's cousin came up with the term eugenics. Eugenics is the idea that, well, He favored fertility for fine minds and sterility for the stupid. Nobody denies his ideas led directly to the horrors of the Nazi era. Now, sometimes, you know, you've probably heard this before, the relationship between Darwin and Nazism. And so, oh, don't go there. You know who's saying this? This is an evolutionist saying this. You know who's saying this? This is Steve Jones, who is professor of genetics at the University College of London. He is president of the Galton Institute, named after that guy, that used to be called the Eugenics Society. He's president of it, and he's saying it. This is Darwin's cousin, survival of the fittest. Why are we helping sick people and stuff like that? Why are we helping somebody that's deficient? And the idea you just need to... Racism was a persistent theme of American and British anthropology. Osborne was the leading figure in the... This is again from Roger Lewin. Further human variations. This is Chief Irontail. Really interesting guy. I don't have time to tell you about him. Usually not pictured without his headrest. But look at this. Look at that massive brow ridge on Chief Irontail. He is, by the way, if you've ever seen the Buffalo Nickel, the Indian Nickel, there were three Native Americans that posed for a composite for that. He was one of them. A picture of Neanderthal skull in an evolutionary book says perhaps he resembled this native of Melanesia. Well, maybe so, except now they found DNA from Neanderthal and apparently he had red hair. This is an Eskimo skull. Very, very different here. Now this up there, high cranium and everything, but look at the jaw bones there. Massive. Compare that with this. Do you see the shape difference? You see the shape there of a typical skull? And look at the shape of that. And look at the chimpanzee. You see how you see the flaring cheekbones here? Not so in most of you, but look at it in the Eskimo. Huge cheekbones. These are all Indians. And some look kind of like the Eskimo. Some, look at the occipital bun on this one right here. Look at the brow ridge on that. A lot of variation. We don't all have to have the same skull. This is Nikolai Valuev, Russian heavyweight champ. Look at his brow. Look at his forehead. Would anybody like to walk up to Mr. Valuev and tell him he's not really a human being? I'm not going to tell him that. You can try to tell him that if you want to. Look at that forehead and look at that. That doesn't mean he's not a human being. It doesn't mean he shouldn't be treated like a human being. It means he has a different shaped skull. And I have a different shaped skull, and some of you have different shaped skulls. It doesn't mean that we're not human beings. Let's dig up Mr. Osborne, though. You know what he would say? He was a racist, and he would say, hey, you know what? I said that you can find some of these traits in the inferior races. And then he would probably say this. You showed us some Eskimo skulls and some Australian Aborigine skulls and some Native American skulls. Were they the ones that invented the computer? Were they the ones that invented the airplane? And you say, they're just not as evolved as us. Well, we're going to answer his racist argument. Look at all these devices right here. Where were they developed, by and large? One of them, two of them might be argued differently by somebody. Like dual thing kind of at the same time. But most all of these came from what? For the most part, with the exception of some Jewish genetics also in there, for the most part, these would be invented by white Caucasian people from mid to upper Europe, genetically. But where were all these things done? United States. The United States has a disproportionate amount of technological advances. Guess what? Why? Why would that be the case? Well, because there was something to stimulate and move things forward. When I used to live in Europe, one thing I noticed in Europe, everybody does the same thing over and over and over. Most of your ancestors and my ancestors did the same thing over and over and over. When they came here and established a new country, you couldn't do just the same thing over and over and over. You needed to start out. You needed to build a village. You needed to find out from the Indians how to plant corn. You needed to interact with each other and figure out the colonies and then decide your relationship with Britain and interaction with that. And you had to build a country, and they came up with a capitalist system, a free market system, a democracy, a representative democracy. Well, there was already capitalism, but they came up with a democracy and stuff, and that created opportunities. Just because they had white genetic genes didn't mean that they're always advancing. Europe, during the Dark Ages, how much were they advancing? Not very much. You didn't have something stimulating and moving along. Some other cultures, you go back to Egypt in Africa, back thousands of years ago, compared to Northern Europe, who was more advanced? All right, let's keep moving here. Because we do have, all right. Forehead and IQ. This is back in 91, somebody was saying, well, but Neanderthal, he didn't have much frontal lobe. This is where all the good stuff goes on, and with that slanted forehead, you don't have much frontal lobe. So you look at the picture here. Yeah, he had a bigger brain, up to 1720 cc, but look, see, it's just not much frontal lobe. We got a lot of frontal lobe. That's why we're happy, because we're so smart. Oh, look, he's so sad, because he's so stupid. Now, let's think about that. If that's so, look at the person next to you if you want to. Does their forehead slope back at all? Most everybody here, your forehead slopes back a little bit. What if somebody doesn't slant back any? Is that a genius? Is that a rocket scientist? What if somebody actually went the other way? Like that. Wow. Wow, that's frontal lobe in despair, right? Look at that. Is that a rocket scientist? No, it's a hunter-gatherer. That's a South African bushman living a lifestyle very similar to an Australian Aborigine. Point being, you can have a forehead like that and be a hunter-gatherer. You can have a forehead like that and be a hunter-gatherer. You can have a forehead like that and maybe you're a rocket scientist, or maybe you say, do you want fries with that? That's not what determines whether or not. So look at this. There's the boxer, and there's Richard Severin Fold of Lehman Brothers. Okay, different people have different things. The old Neanderthal idea. When I was a kid, I think I actually saw this in the Chicago Museum of Natural History. This was the old idea, you know, they're Neanderthal. And this is a more recent representation of Neanderthal. After they also found out that he apparently had red hair. That's a human being. This is a representation of a Neanderthal burial. I took this photo up at the Museum of in New York. Now watch these. 2007, University of Exeter. New evidence debunks the stupid Neanderthal myth. Discover magazine. Scientists have discovered Neanderthal diets were sophisticated. Their tools efficient. They're developed more similar to ours than researchers ever imagined. January 2010, body ornamentation widely considered as conclusive evidence for modern behavior symbolic thinking. It was not recognized in Neanderthals until now. Now, some tried to say that's not it, but just keep watching the evidence. This is from Slovenia, possibly a Neanderthal flute made from a cave bear bone. Those who say it's not a flute, you know what they say that is? They say it's a bone that had been gnawed on. Take a look at it. You see the hole there? You see the hole there? And doesn't it look like there was a hole there? And maybe a hole there? Does that look like a bone that got gnawed on, or does that look like a flute? Washington Post. Here, Science Daily. This is just from this year, April of this year. Neanderthals were not inferior to modern humans. April 30th, 2014, University of Boulder. Evidence does not support the opinion that Neanderthals were less advanced than anatomically modern humans. The evidence for cognitive inferiority is simply not there. What we're saying, the conventional view of Neanderthal is not true. And they talk about the mistaken concepts people had in the past. They didn't think they had this. They didn't think, they didn't use complex symbolic communication. They were less efficient hunters, inferior weapons, narrow diet, yada, yada, yada. Richardson found that none of the hypotheses were supported by the available research. Researchers were comparing Neanderthals not to their contemporaries on other continents, but to their successors. It would be like comparing the performance of a Model T to a modern day Ferrari, and therefore conclude that Henry Ford was, in other words, stupider than Ferrari. Neanderthals are us. Guess what? They have now, after a long time, I remember seeing scientists say, no, they're too different. We're not, now they've decided, news for you people, every one of you is part Neanderthal, the scientists are now saying. Interbreeding with humans. How closely related to us? I'd see them as a more form of humans, a bit more different than today, but not much. Non-Africans are part Neanderthal, genetic research shows. University of Wisconsin. Most people, Neanderthal's gene still exists in most people. About 2 to 3% of your DNA on average is Neanderthal. That's the same, approximately the same amount as from one great-great-great-grandparent. If you know in your family history, your great-great-great-grandparent, you got as much of him as you've got Neanderthal. You might say, whoa, but that guy was close. How? Because all your ancestors have some Neanderthal in them, pretty much. Okay? Neanderthals are from Europe. That's where, in Asia. And other people bred with, had children with they like people today, breed and have children. And so you have this. Let's go back to that forehead and IQ thing. This, you remember when they were saying, oh, he didn't have the frontal lobe? This is a brain expert, okay? This is from BBC, you know, the British broadcasting thing. They're interviewing Professor Ralph Holloway, Columbia University, expert on ancient brains. He said, the second thing you can tell about the shape of the frontal lobe, it's really absolutely no different from what you can find in modern Homo sapiens. Here's the interview. This, Lewin said, he is probably the world's leading expert, the world's expert on modern fossil hominid brains. The first thing is it's bigger, 20% bigger brain. But the other thing is that the frontal lobe is no different. This is back years ago, back in 1945, William Howell said, the Neanderthal brain was positively definitely not smaller than our own. Indeed, and it's the rather bitter pill, it appears to have been perhaps a little larger. Yes, it was. Chimpanzee is 400 cc, gorilla is 500, aborigine about 1278, Hindu 1335, Europeans 1446, Eskimos 1516, Neanderthals 15, another Neanderthal 1600, another one 1625. The reason they had bigger brains is because they're bigger. By the way, that doesn't mean they're smarter, okay? Men have 10% bigger brains than women. Does that mean that you're smarter? If you want dessert tonight when you go home, don't raise your hand. The thing is, men are bigger in general. Since men are usually bigger, they usually have a bigger head. What's going to be inside the bigger head? A bigger brain. It doesn't mean that you're smarter, but it's just the size of the skull. Homo erectus, real quick, we need to start winding up towards closing here. I've gone over time. Homo erectus, even more, this is more like about 1,000 cc. So instead of bigger, it's smaller, but still within modern range. Here's from Newsweek, I believe it was, New Scientist some years ago, said they used stone tools. Now it seems likely they built shelters, seemed to find remains of huts. Ancient mariners, early humans much smarter than we suspected. And it, coordinating, probably used language to coordinate. Homo erectus was clearly not a glorified chimp. They hunted animals with well-crafted spears. We believe they made sea voyage crossings. The evidence suggests that the cognitive capabilities of Homo erectus may be due for reprisal. This is Homo ergaster, which is the African version of Homo erectus. Very similar. There's a San Diego Museum representation of him. That would be a human being. Welcome to the club. They lived at the same time. They say they lived early. I don't accept their dates. But this, according to their dates, there was a period where they were all three here. They say there were Neanderthals and Homo erectus and Homo sapiens on this planet at the same time. Yeah, I believe so too. I believe it's three different types of people. Concurrence. I'm not going to take time to go through this because we're running. This is their dates, but even by their dates, they're talking. Well, I just don't have time for that. I got to hurry. Okay, here's the difference between Lucy. That's a representation of Lucy. That's a representation of Homo ergaster. What's that? An ape. What's that? A person. There's one thing that looks human about that. You know what it is? The whites of the eyes. You suppose that was fossilized? No. New Scientist. These scientists are saying something that I've been saying for a long time. January 1993, Pat Shipman, on Origin Races by Pat Shipman. Wolpoof and his colleagues are now proposing nothing less than the complete abolition of Homo erectus on the grounds that the species is insufficiently distinct from Homo sapiens. All fossil specimens of Homo erectus and archaic Homo sapiens, including Neanderthals, should be reclassified into a single species, Homo sapien. And they point out a commonly cited thing, and one of the things they're pointing out, you know what? You've been focusing on European skeletons. The early evolutionists were Europeans. Homo habilis, it's a bunch of like, mostly a bunch of like small bits of broken bones or stuff and crushed bones. I'm not going to take time to talk about it. But now that they found out more, surprisingly, ape-like limb portions. Had a body structure much more like an ape. These are from an ape. Homo habilis, physically similar to Australopithecines. From a morphological point of view, isn't much reason to accept it as within Homo. It would seem more transparent to call it Australopithecus, which means southern ape. So it would be an ape. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Here's some scientists saying Homo habilis and Homo rudolfensis don't belong in our genus. So in other words, what these are saying and what I'm saying is, these things are human and those things are ape. Now they're evolutionists. They still think we came from apes, but these scientists are saying what? The same thing that I was saying at the beginning. These are humans and those are apes. Australopithecines. Let's start to get through a little bit on this. The most famous Australopithecine, Lucy. There she is. Okay, that's Lucy. The thing that made a big deal about Lucy is that if that hip structure is done correctly, it's more like a person than a chimpanzee. But it's broken in 40 pieces and glued together. Maybe he did it right, I don't know, I wasn't there. I can accept that some apes had a different hip structure than some others. But they were surprised. There's different Australopithecines. One, we had the body, but not the head. That was afarensis. Another Australopithecine, we had the head, but not the body, Africanus. It was kind of funny, as they found more bones, they found more of the one that didn't have the head, and they were surprised how ape-like it was. The one where they had the head, the ape-like head, but not the body, when they found some more body, they were surprised how ape-like it was. Because they're apes! This doesn't have the feet, but in the museums, they put human feet on them. One of the paleo artists talked about they want us to put human feet on there, but you can't do that. This just shows you, look, this is from Lewin's book. This is an evolutionist. Watch this. The top is a chimpanzee. The bottom is a human. In between is Australopithecine. Well, let's just borrow the lines from the chimpanzee and see how well that fits. In fact, he says, Australopithecus afarensis, although it is a hominid, is much more like a chimpanzee than a modern human. There's Africanus, don't have time to talk about that. To be sure, according, now some would say more, but this is what Arswaga says. To be sure, the only human characteristic that these fossil hominids, or most of them had, was bipedalism. That is, they walked on 2 feet. They're saying the head, chimpanzee-sized brain. This scientist is saying the only thing human about them, particularly, basically, is this erect posture. As far as more outstanding characteristics, our brain, same category as chimpanzees. Okay, what about that bipedalism? In New York, they've got Mr. and Mrs. Australopithecine, you know, walking around. They found some footprints, and they claim, that Australopithecus made them. How do they know that? And you can see here, the dark is what they've actually found, and the white is what they're imagining. So you see they put some human feet on there, but guess what? This is how the Houston Museum portrayed, and some of the scientists saying, no, it was more of a this type of thing, and I believe that. So, and this, I really like this. Oh, bonobos. Bonobo is a kind of, used to be called a pygmy chimp. These things walk around on 2 legs part of the time already. The hole in the bottom of their head on chimpanzee, it's toward the back for this type of position. On a bonobo, it's closer to our position. But it's an ape. And there's other apes that walk around on 2 legs sometimes. let me just tell you this. Just because your great-great-grandfather was a biped doesn't mean that all bipeds are your great-great-grandfather. That walks on 2 legs. It doesn't mean that's great-grandpa. That walks on 2 legs. That walked on 2 legs. Just because something walked on 2 legs doesn't mean you came from it. Now here's the really exciting thing about this. They found an Australopithecine genus of some species in South Africa, and they've been working on extricating it for years. I still haven't seen the final results that they finally got them out. But they've got enough to find out it's got the feet. And guess what the scientists have said about the feet? It had some chimpanzee-like morphology. The foot had grasping, tree-climbing capabilities. More bones from the same foot revealed they had a chimpanzee character. Consistent indications with arboreality. You've heard of Arbor Day, where you plant a tree? Arboreality means That's where you dwell, in the trees. I think it's likely Australopithecus nested in trees, probably spent parts of the day feeding in trees, as do orangutans and chimpanzees. Wait a minute. What did Arsuaga say the only human-like thing about Australopithecines was? That it walked on two legs. But now that they found one that has feet, they're saying what? Might not be the same species, but the genus Australopithecine. They're saying it had chimpanzee-like grasping capabilities, nested and slept in trees. So what is that? Where does that leave it? Ape. Take out the whites of the eyes. Ape. Tools. They say, yeah, but Australopithecine used tools. You want to see the Australopithecine's tools? First off, they say this might have been made by Australopithecine Gary or not. You find a tool, it doesn't mean it was with it. For example, if you find behind Kentucky Fried Chicken a knife and a chicken, does that prove that chickens use knives? No, it could prove that the tools were used on the chicken. But I'm going to show you their tools. Those are the Australopithecine tools. Now, here's where you can buy some. And they say, be careful. There's a lot of these tools for sale on eBay and other things. Every broken cobblestone is not a human created Paleolithic tool. In other words, some of them are broken rocks. Yeah, only these are the ones that were really broken. Well, how can you tell that? Because there's too much. I mean, the way it's broken, there's just too much intelligence behind the way that it would. You couldn't just by chance have a rock break. Oh, you're saying there's too much intelligent design in those rocks to have happened by chance. There's not too much intelligent design in a human being. Oh, that can happen by chance. Oh, you can have nothing and it turns into something, blows up. Yeah, that could happen. You could have non-life and woo, turned into, you know, cells with proteins. Oh, that can happen. But that's just, no. They look kind of like broken rocks to me. Maybe somebody broke them, maybe somebody didn't. You want to see some tools? If you remember the old Crocodile Dundee, you know, now that's a knife, you know, now that's a tool. These are Neanderthal and Homo erectus tools. How many of you have American, Native American ancestry? Okay. You know, when they talk about Iron Age, Bronze Age, all that, they use those terms for the Middle East. They don't use those for North America. You know why? For most areas and most tribes, it didn't exist. You know what we went straight from? Straight from Stone Age to trading some pelts for something made in England. Were your ancestors less than human because they used stone tools? Ending notes. The receding chin was something I couldn't find for a long time till I found the Tasmanians. Almost no chin. There's no Tasmanians left. Here's a picture of the last surviving Tasmanians, late 1800s. This is William Lane, Billy King. Last captured male. Isn't that horrific? Last captured male. Spent the last year of his life as a whaler. Even in his death in 1869, they gave him no respect. Dr. Lodowick Crowther removed his head in the name of science. His head was never found, neither is the tobacco pouch that was made out of his scrotum. Horrible how they treated people. This man is half Tasmanian. One of the things about these traits among the Tasmanians and Australians is when there was breeding with Caucasian genes, it tended to disappear very quickly. After just two generations, a Tasmanian and a European had children, Tasmanian and European had children, and then those two had children. So after two generations, this man, he could walk out of an Irish pub. You know, you'd never guess. Well, Neanderthal bones are found in Europe, but there have been Caucasian people there for a long time, and that has disappeared. Final points, variation in apes. You remember I said apes vary even more? See how different those the eyes are on those two skulls? Do you see how different the nose is on those two skulls? Do you see how different the head is on those two skulls and the nose and the eyes? This is from college textbook physical anthropology. All of those are gorillas, same species, all modern. That's why if you go to the zoo and talk to the zookeepers, they can give different names for the gorillas because they look different. Gorillas have a wide variety in their gorilla skulls. We've got some wide variety, not as much, in our skulls. But I think if the gorillas will let us have, if we can let the gorillas have variety in their skulls, we ought to be able to have some variety in our skulls here. Interspecific variation, a series of six skulls, all members of the same species, gorilla, gorilla. To illustrate the point, note the great amount of variation. College textbook here, evolutionary textbook. How many species represented? One, all modern gorilla. A series of hominid fossils shows much variation, less to be broken up by a great many paleontologists into a number of distinct ones. Last ape here, I told you I'd tell you about that new big one. At first they called it, it was known as the lion-eating ape. They don't know that it really does. One researcher saw one eating a leopard, but it could have been just a dead leopard, or maybe he killed it. These things are huge. They went to find them. This is the area they were looking in. They put up some trip cameras. They caught a picture of one, and here's some they took up in the trees. I'm gonna show you a picture of a dead one. Those are grown men sitting behind it. That's a billy ape. That's a chimpanzee, just recently discovered. The only picture I have of billy ape skull is right there. But I want you to compare it to a chimpanzee skull. Of course, there's this is from bone clones. There's different chimpanzee skulls too. But watch the facial angle. Look, see how it's flatter? So look at the recess in there. See how it's less there? Look at the ear, going from the ear hole to back where the neck muscles attach. You see the difference? How that this would have walked more upright than this, apparently, based on where the neck muscles attach. Look at the cranium shape on this compared to the cranium shape on that chimpanzee. Look at the ratio from above the ear to below compared with a typical chimpanzee below to upper. You know what that is? That's just a variation in a different type of chimpanzee. Now, what if somebody had found a skull in the ground, it wasn't there, and it had a flatter face and a bigger brain, and of course, being that big, it's gonna have a bigger brain. Does it mean it's human? Nope. Apes are still apes. People are still people. What did Genesis say? It said God created animals, and they reproduce after their kind, and he created people, and we reproduce out of our kind. I've gone way over. Thank you for your attention. People are people, and apes are apes. Thank you very much for the last slide from Roger Lewin. Scientists, contrary to the myth they themselves promulgate, carry a generous dose of subjectivity. Nowhere else does that occur in this, as much as in the search for human origins. Much of the labeling was done in egoism, lack of appreciation for variation, and Pilbeam talking about a theory that they used to have about Ramapithecus and when it separated from chimpanzees and stuff, and he held one theory and then it got disproved wrong. He said, the theories are fossil-free, in some cases even fossil-proof. Theories have often said far more about the theorists than they have to what actually happened. Keep that in mind. Thank you for your attention. I went way over, but I really appreciate your good attention. If we are not evolved from apes that came from chemicals that came from nothing. We came from somewhere else. And if we are intelligent and show design, that means we came from an intelligent designer. Where do you stand before your creator? If you believe that your creator has communicated with us through the Hebrew prophets, and if you believe that he sent his son and he rose from the dead, as we studied the other morning, if you have not, won't you submit your life to him in obeying the gospel as they did in Acts 2:38 as we stand and sing.